Welcome to Unpacking the Digital Shelf, where we explore brand manufacturing in the digital age.
Hey everyone, Peter Crosby coming to you from the Digital Shelf Studios remote headquarters. All right, it's my dining room table in South Boston. And Rob is at the Digital Shelf Institute Western Mass location. Okay, he's at his in-laws in the Berkshires. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Peter.
Crazy times. You know, our audio quality may suffer because we're not in our big fancy studios, but damn it, our content will not. Rob actually wanted me to start this podcast with day six of captivity, but I don't know. I felt the Anne Frank references were a step too far.
Gallows humor, my friend.
Gallows,
gallows
yes.
Humor.
A lot of that going on. But Rob, I thought it might be fun to sort of dig into, you know, as we're all searching for information about what's happening, what shifts are going on, all that kind of stuff. And I was wondering if you had any statistics that you wish you had that we haven't been able to find so far.
Oh, yeah. So I think what we want to talk about today is a bunch of different ways of thinking about winners and losers in this shift, how much of the change is durable, and how budgets are shifting, how manufacturers are reacting. Let me tell you some of the stats that, you know, were on my mind as I've been living in quarantine and thinking through how people's behaviors are changing. First is, I am really curious whether the number of showers taken per capita in America has decreased. Like, how many people just get up, turn on their computer, and are on Zoom? And, you know, that's the new morning routine.
I would think maybe they've gone up because people are, like, freaking out about being clean all the time.
It could go either way. That's what's so interesting about this. And then it's got implications. Like, are you using more soap or are you using less soap?
Right,
what about
right.
shampoo, right? And related to that is, how much laundry are you doing? Are you doing less laundry? I mean, I think, you know, I'm dressed like a schlub right now, but I had a Zoom yesterday with a guy who had a suit with a pocket square on in his kitchen.
I think some people feel like I still need to go through the routine of dressing up and, like, not being in that schlub thing. I've got that sort of helping them pull it together.
So I wonder,
you know, I don't know about you, but my Barry's boot camp shutting down is killing me. And so I was just wondering, what are the pounds gained per capita with every gym in the nation shut down?
You know, related to that. So I ordered a kettlebell. I'm at my in-laws. I ordered a kettlebell so I could keep fit here. And I it's a big kettlebell. It's an 80 pounder. And I ordered it from Amazon and it was Prime. And the way that it was delivered is they just slapped the delivery label onto the kettlebell itself. They didn't wrap this thing. It wasn't in anything. It was just the kettlebell with a delivery label, and they left it on the stoop.
And was it like UPS, or was this like a local delivery thing?
Delivery.
Oh,
and
my
God. I was so impressed. It arrived almost immediately, and then I talked to another friend of mine who was trying to think, you know, what do I do at home? And he had ordered a kettlebell too. And so it's one of those shadow categories where there just might be huge numbers of kettlebell orders going on across the nation right now. A giant spike in demand.
It's actually really cool because also a lot of personal trainers are going online and on Instagram and, like, having workout sessions. Like, there's a lot of Barry's Bootcamp instructors that, you know, with just some simple bands and stuff like that, you can just get online on Instagram and get your workout in. But I hate sweating at home, so I'm trying to figure it out. What do you think about, so speaking of gaining weight, what do you think, we know, right, that there's a gain in the use of alcohol. That's certainly happening right now.
Yeah, huge.
At least in my household.
Yeah, the online order spikes across a number of the largest alcohol providers is just astounding. I mean, it's we're seeing some of the largest alcohol ordering across categories, beer, wine, spirits, of all time, much higher than Super Bowl, much higher than 4th of July. I think that those groups are doing well, and also they're doing well in new channels that traditionally were smaller channels.
Yeah, it actually, there was the chief e-commerce officer at Ahold said that they're seeing a larger percentage of customers over the age of 60 that are coming online. So I think there's a lot of, like, kids that are talking to their parents or their grandparents and saying, you got to do it this way. You can't be going to the store anymore, grandma. And they're getting online. And that's from Nathaniel Meyerson at CNN Business, an article that he wrote.
I mean, I think the interesting question for this, right, is some of the stats that Nathaniel had in CNS Business were downloads of Instacart, Walmart's grocery app, and Shipt, which is owned by Target, increased 218%, 160%, and 124% respectively last Sunday compared with a year prior. Despite promises for contactless delivery from several providers, including Uber Eats, food delivery apps are not experiencing a similar surge in daily downloads. So this is saying that for groceries, staples, essentials, people are shifting to online orders. And I saw somewhere else that the online buying grocery penetration had spiked by as much as 10 points in over a week or two.
Yeah, Instacart said that.
And yeah, so
20 times in California, New York, Washington, and Oregon. Yeah,
20 times. I didn't see that. Oh man. So the real question here is how much of this is durable. So you know, we get this too shall pass, and people are going to get back to their lives. And is the experience that they're getting through Instacart, through Shipt, through Walmart Grocery, through Kroger Click and Collect, and all those programs, is it good enough that they're going to say, you know what? Geez, you know, during quarantine for a couple months, I ordered online and it was nice. And why am I going to the store? So I think my guess is some of that is going to be durable. Some of the gains that online grocery order are getting during this exceptional period are going to stick around. It's the real question is how much of the gain, you know?
Yeah.
It seems unrealistic that all 20 points are going to stick around, but if 5 points stick around, that's a massive shift in the industry almost overnight.
So an analyst at Credit Suisse, a guy named Seth Sigman, said, wrote an analysis saying that they see the structural changes, you know, accelerating the changes in online shopping possibly by 5 years. I've been able to get access to the report, but that seems possible and logical.
Yeah, I mean, it's early days still.
Yeah,
but we've seen shifts in budget immediately from store to online within many of the Fortune 1000 companies that we've spoken to. And this seems to be across categories. Whether we already talked about alcohol, but apparel, which, apparel is going to, I think, suffer quite a lot from this. We've heard Macy's, Kohl's, Target, Amazon stopping Q2 orders. The whole chain.
Yeah, and the supply chain for apparel is really difficult too.
It's really difficult, right? So those companies that were relying on sell through the department store channels or Target, they're going to move online aggressively to see if they can make up some of that volume, right?
Yeah.
They're not going to make up all the volume, but maybe they can make some of it up. So you got alcohol, you got apparel, obviously all the grocery categories with Instacart and Shipt and so forth are putting a lot of effort into digital right now. Home gym, so Peloton stock is way up. We just talked about kettlebells. Probably every piece of home gym equipment you can imagine is doing quite well right now. And so I across the industry, it's it feels like that 5 year like early shift that you just quoted, this whole thing is going to accelerate digital 5 years. That might not be that wrong, right? It might, like, the budgets and the people and the attention for all these companies are going to shift hard right now.
Yeah.
And there might not be a compelling event for them to go back to business as usual in 3 months.
Yeah, Business Insider had a list of the stocks that have soared during the virus. Peloton, as you mentioned, Netflix, of course, Zoom. I mean, here we are.
Yeah.
Podcasting over it. Thank you, Zoom. Thank you, Zoom. Come on, Zoom, 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 Zoom. So anyone that knows that song is of my age group. God bless you. Blue Apron, which goes against kind of the people not using Uber Eats, but at least maybe people get to cook at home, but not have to go out. Lakeland Industries, which makes hazmat suits. So
nice. Go Lakeland.
I know. Please crank them out. My God.
So I get the Blue Apron thing because, you know, it's you're at home. cooking's a great activity, but also it's packaged.
Yeah.
NPR had a study that came out about 3 months ago that said more than a quarter of home delivery restaurant drivers admitted to eating the food on the way to delivery. Yeah. And a lot of people saw that. So you can imagine, you know, there's some fries sticking out of the package and they just grab a couple fries. And,
yeah, I did hear. And, yeah.
And so, you know, like I think a lot of people saw that and they're like, oh, I don't know about this home delivery from the restaurants, but they're willing to do things like a Blue Apron, which are packaged. And also, you know, the whole point of those meal kits is that they relieve some of the stress of having to think through what are you going to cook? What recipes do you pick up? With the grocery stores being a little bit empty right now, they might be lacking some of the ingredients that you're looking for, and Blue Apron doesn't have that problem.
Right. Hey, Rob, what do you think of, I have this, you know, particularly with the news that Amazon suspended FBA shipments for 3P sellers that are not in the, so 3P seller FBA shipments shut down so that they can open up their warehouse space for the critical core products that people are trying to buy right now. And it just seems to me that this also will put pressure on brand manufacturers to expand the number of channels that they're able to show up on, to kind of spread their bets a bit more. Is that thought right? Do you feel like 3P sellers who really are relying on Amazon and are, you know, see that possible channel being, unless they have their own fulfillment capabilities themselves, they really might want to start to spread their bets around to other retailers? Do you think there's anything to that?
Maybe. I mean, ultimately, this whole thing is about demand management.
Yeah.
And in some cases, the demand is falling off a cliff. In other places, the demand is spiking. And that's putting a lot of sudden whiplash pressure all up and down the supply chain in various ways. Amazon's logistics network is, I mean, ludicrously impressive, but it runs at near capacity most of the time. They're not sitting there with a lot of spare capacity. I mean, they're one of the theories that we talked about with Eamon earlier in an earlier episode had to do with Amazon pushing to 3P in part because they just can't build warehouse capacity fast enough, right? So I'm willing to take their strategy there at face value. They're hiring 100,000 additional workers. Yeah. They're clearing out warehouse space. They're trying to meet the demand of the crisis, which is, you know, for toilet paper, for example, and they're doing it as aggressively as they can. So I don't think it's necessarily telling about the durable demand change in other categories. I think it's more about the current demand change that's very spiky. And Amazon's able to do this because they've just got so much nimbleness and agility and execution for their supply chain as an organization compared to many. Yeah. I think that if you're looking at the demand drop in Amazon, I don't think it's going to be a durable demand drop for your category. I think it's just the nature of this crisis. Of
what's happening to everyone right now. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just hard to imagine that once we renormalize, people aren't going to just go back to Amazon habitually. I mean, I'll tell you our grocery store, I bake a lot of bread. Our grocery store was out of flour. So I went to Amazon to order flour. Amazon's out of flour. So then one of the brands I really like for my sourdough is King Arthur. So I went to King Arthur, their direct to consumer site, and that was out of flour. So I think you'll see a lot of that where people try Amazon and then try something else and then try something else. And maybe some of those purchases will bleed out, but I think a lot of that behavior will snap back to Amazon once the inventory's back up.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Amazon, you know, their algorithm, if you're out of stock, you get destroyed and you're at the bottom of the sales results for 3 months to climb back up. I wonder if somehow they will be working on their algorithm so that the out of stocks that have happened as a result of what's happening right now are not punishing suppliers who had no control over whether they were staying in stock or not.
Doubtful.
You think they're just
the good thing is everyone's out of stock.
Exactly. In some ways, though, that's an interesting thing because it does say be ready when things do snap back. Have you know, when we think about what are the attributes that will drive rediscovery? You know, what are the experiences you can create online? Make sure that your content is up to date, taking advantage of the latest attributes from your retailers, so that when you do get on, you've got really solid content experiences that drive those algorithms.
Or even right now, right? Like there's a lot of people, let's go back to the gym example. There's a lot of people who want to stay fit at home, but don't necessarily have a lot of experience managing their own fitness routine. They're not really sure what's good or bad. You could imagine as a manufacturer updating your listings on Amazon to mention, you know, workout at home during the pandemic, you know, COVID-19 workout at home, like whatever the search phrases are, and having that actually be useful to people, right? So workout bands, kettlebells, jump ropes, all that type of stuff that consumers may not be thinking about exactly. One of the things that I used to use were Captain Crush, you know, grip squeezers, so you could improve the grip strength of your hand.
I'm sorry, Captain Crush.
Yeah, Captain Crush. I know. You're definitely worth making fun of me for those things. It's, you know, they're the things that you put in your hand and you squeeze and you're trying to make your hand and forearm strength stronger so that you can hold more weight with it.
No, now it makes me want cereal. That's why I was reacting like Captain Crunch. Now I'm starved.
This is a little bit of, we should probably link to this in the show notes, but one thing that you can do if you've got enough grip strength is you can tear entire telephone books in half. It's one of those like little carnival tricks that's pretty fun. But
do you have a video of yourself doing that?
No. there are the things that you got to be prepared for when the demand picks back up. But then there are the things right now to help your brand be relevant to people and solving their problems in the moment right now. And that's what's so interesting about the digital shelf as a whole, is that you can change your brand and adapt your brand to whatever the current market condition is much more quickly than you can on a physical shelf. Like you can't update your packaging on the product that's already in Kroger, but you can change the packaging on Amazon.com and on Kroger.com to communicate value in the moment of crisis. And so I think we're going to see more and more of that depending on how long this goes on for. One company that I would love to see doing more of this, I'm a huge fan of theirs, especially given the toilet paper crisis of 2020, is Toto. They make the Japanese toilets, right?
Yeah.
I don't understand why their stock is not spiking like Zoom's or 3M's or Peloton's. Because if everyone in the, this is the moment where America should embrace Japanese toilets. Everybody should be going to Amazon and ordering a Toto right now, because that is your forever solution, not just to the short-term toilet paper crunch, but for toilet paper forever in your house.
I'm sorry, you're going to need to educate me here. Yeah. What is a Toto toilet that does not involve toilet paper?
Well, so the Japanese style of toilet is, it's like a bidet built into your toilet, you know? So you do your thing and then it's got water jets and hair dryers and stuff like that going on. And so you don't need toilet paper.
So that really does eliminate the need for toilet paper?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. I mean, this is probably more information than our audience needs, but I've never used a bidet. I've seen them, and then I just couldn't try.
My family moved to England in 1990, and we stayed first in a hotel room that had a bidet that was separate from the toilet. And I remember vividly, my brother and I were thinking, what is this thing? It's toilet-like in appearance, but it's clearly not a toilet.
Also like a water fountain.
Well, that's the thing, is that, so that what do you do as a kid? The first thing you do is if there's a knob or a button or a lever or a switch, you are going right for that thing. And so we go right for the water knob, and we turn it, and the water darn near hit the ceiling. I mean, we're talking 6-7 feet of, that's a tremendous amount of pressure. So like the Japanese toilets are more gentle than that UK toilet, you know.
Well, that makes sense.
But yeah, so why not toilet America? This is my call to action for America. America,
Toto for everyone.
Japanese toilets.
I don't know if I want a plumber in my house right now, but I hear you.
Yeah.
Hey, so let's close out. You had mentioned this earlier, but this what the trend that we are starting to see where manufacturers, where suppliers are really rethinking their budgets and frankly their team organization when it comes to shopper marketing and advertising spend. We had a conference call with some executives and some partners through the Digital Shelf Institute the other day. And Rachel Tipograph, who's the co-founder of Micmac, that's a, you know, in a way, kind of a shopper, making shoppable moments happen through digital means. It's an amazing agency and capability. But she was on, and she had four sort of pieces of advice to the executives on the call about what she's seeing working in the midst of this pandemic. And one was move your dollars, you know, in-store, TV plus event dollars. She's seeing that move into e-commerce marketing. Two, diversify your spend. That if everyone takes those millions of dollars that they're repurposing and put it all into Amazon, your customer acquisition cost is going to go through the roof. And so you've got to pick some other lanes where you can reach your audiences that are not necessarily Amazon. Let me just stop there with those first two, Rob, and see if you have any thoughts or anything to add in those two.
I think there's categorically a couple different ways to look at shifting business operations from a brick store focus to a more, I'm not going to say online, I don't think that's exactly right, but more of an omni-channel digital shelf focus. And one type of shift is simply accelerate changes that are already happened. Like there's not a manufacturer in the world that isn't shifting some trade or brand dollars over to, you know, online performance marketing. And some people call it shopper marketing. Some people just call it, you know, digital advertising. So, you know, this falls into different buckets, but that's been happening for years. This is just good. So one type of shift is you just accelerate stuff that you're already doing. I think that's going to happen. How durable that shift is, again, is going to just depend on when the demand snaps back, how much of that demand goes back to the store. The second type of shift is a more durable shift, which isn't just accelerate what you're doing, but instead do something differently. And that's the more interesting thing for me, is that over the last 7 years, you see, or 10 years, you see online as being a guy in a basement in a corner managing Amazon, to then a team somewhere within the sales group managing Amazon, to then a team that has like a center of excellence. Yeah. That not just manages Amazon, but also participates with Walmart.com and Google Manufacturing Center. And, you know, if you're in B2B industrial supply, the Grangers and MSCs of the world that have invested heavily in digital. And then you move to like a CDO model where you get a span of control over supply chain, plus maybe some advertising and then the sales organization. And so there's an evolution of organizational model that has happened for a lot of companies in response over a long period of time to this digital shift. So this second type of shift, which she goes on to, I think is, you know, once you change the org structure, that's more durable. That's really hard to snap back in the face of snapback demand. So she says, number three, redeploy your teams from physical retail marketing to virtual. If you actually make that change, it's really hard 3-4 months from now to say, okay, go back to that job that you used to be doing, right?
Yeah, I mean, where that shift does is encouraging. One, those silos need to come down anyway. We all know that. And I think the digital people were having trouble in some places having the influence, the sort of power, because it's still an 85-15. I mean, that, you know, 85% offline dollars, you know, revenue, and 15% online, you know, is sort of a broad number. And so it's always been difficult for the digital side to say, you've got to overinvest in this channel. And, you know, there's always some tension that springs up there. And I think this sort of, hopefully, even if people are still going to retain their physical, you know, online capabilities, but if more of the merging of those teams happen and some knowledge sharing and skill sharing happens, even if they all sort of return somewhat to their corners, that awareness of each other's sort of expertises and that knowledge sharing, I think could be really powerful.
Yeah, I think that's right. Actually, one of the first episodes we did was with Sunesh Shah from Bosch.
Yeah.
And one of the values that he had mentioned specifically in that, in bringing the digital and the physical marketing teams, the brand and the trade under one functional team at Bosch Power Tools, was the surprises in the ways that getting exposed across those different teams to each other's concerns was beneficial in a durable way that changed behavior. And it wasn't just, you know, the offline people learning, you know, e-commerce challenges, but it was also the e-commerce people learning things about branding that are really important.
For sure.
And yeah. So, I mean, even if I'm wrong and the organizations are more aggressive to snap back to business as usual after this is done, I think your point is well made that there's going to be lasting changes just due to the experience of this that will echo throughout the industry.
Dun, dun, dun. And her final point is you have to figure out creative ways to make new content. And, you know, that's a lot of what Micmac does with their customers. But I think the point is right. You know, when you can't gather more than 10 people in a room, you need content delivered online that's creating those connections between people and thinking about what forms that might take and how they get delivered through social channels, et cetera. I think is a really cool challenge and opportunity that will last beyond the snapback. Right? So Rachel will actually be with us on a podcast on April 2nd, and that's actually going to be the first piece of content in our newly announced Digital Shelf Virtual Summit series. As many of you know, we had planned a live gathering in May for the Digital Shelf Institute, and we had an entire summit plan. And we are pivoting to take that content online and create a mix of content. Some of it might be just videos. Some of it will be these podcasts. Some of it will be interactive webinars, digital roundtables, videos of hand puppets. We're making it up as we go along. But the first issue will be Rachel on our podcast talking about this advice and much more of what she's seeing in the industry and digging into these things deeper. So join us. You can sign up to get updates on all of the content that will be shifting out or that we'll be sending out during this virtual summit series. And you can go to salsify.com/digital-shelf-summit-2020. That's salsify.com/digital-shelf-summit-2020. Throw your name into the form, your email address into the form, and we'll just keep you up to date as all of these things that have been planned at our live summit now start coming out virtually. It's going to be some tremendous content that I know will resonate, not only for this next period, but also for your commerce strategies to come in 2020 and beyond. So, Rob, thanks for joining in from DSI West. Or Western Mass, anyway.
Yeah.
For all of you out there, please follow us on the Institute's LinkedIn page. If there are things you want to hear about during this time, drop us a line because we will find the experts to talk about it. Tweet at us, Win Digital Shelf, you know, and we'd love a review just to keep people coming. But really, most of all, thank you so much for being part of our virtual community.